Welcome to the Tuesday Sports Show.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to the ORN Sport on this Tuesday evening. We will be discussing over the next hour all the sports news from the past week and previewing what's to come over the next 7 days.
Murray wins! Murray wins it all! This is going to be a top play.
Is URN Sport.
Yes, it is one past six, and you are listening to the Tuesday Sports Show, where we discuss all sports that aren't football. Obviously, my mess up at the start has already got a few laughs, but I'm actually joined here by Ollie, Jack and Alex Zonneveld, and we will be discussing today rugby union, rugby league and boxing. But we're going to start at the rugby league, and we're going to go to you, Jack. I mean, big win for England against Papua New Guinea.
Yes, very much so. Wayne Bennett's selections have basically just been under fire for the entire Rugby League World Cup. And for the PNG game, he named pretty much the same side that it's been doing the job for the last few weeks. PNG were dealt a bit of a hammer blow very early on as fullback and captain David Mead collided with Luke Gale's shoulder just 90 seconds into the game. He got taken off for a head injury assessment that he didn't come back from, which left bench player Stargroth Armian is filling in at fullback. The only reason I said it because I get to say that name. Two tries very early on to wing star Jermaine McGilvray, everyone's struggling today, were the only points very early on, and Luke Gale's kicking in general play has not been up to his standard in the Super League this season, but I think we should probably get him on goal kicking at this point, because Gareth Widdop just can't, he doesn't have the radar that Luke Gale does at all. Both of his early attempts failing, leaving 8-0 early on. 31 minutes in, Alex Walmsley barged his way over from close range, following a bit of a scuffle on the ground after Kevin Brown got knocked out just very briefly, and again PNG fullback Stargroth Armian seemed to take exception to this and basically just dove on him on the ground, which got a bit of a scuffle going. This left the gap 14-0 at the break. 53 minutes in, grubber through from Widdop on a bit of broken field play was pounced on by Ben Curry, giving the Warrington star a clear onto the line. The Cumbles then hit back through danger man Gary Lowe, who scored in the corner, to reduce the gap back to 14, but this very much was England's quarter-final to lose. Three tries in the last 11 minutes iced the game, sent them on the way to the semi-finals. It wasn't a very good game. It was error-riddled from England. 56% completion. We're not going to trouble any of the other three teams if we keep completing like that, but we got the job done. And that's all that we can ask for at the moment, I suppose.
So even with a 36 win, you weren't particularly impressed with the performance.
36-6 win.
36, yeah.
That score was very much inflated, I think. As I say, three tries all converted, I think, in the last 11 minutes of the game. And that's basically what happened there was the PNG defence got tired. And you look at Tonga, you look at Fiji, you look at Australia, they're not going to tire like that. And to say that we were only, 18-20 points to 6 up, at about 65 minutes, it's a bit of a worry still.
I mean, given that, did you think there was a chance for an upset maybe sent in this game? I mean, before the game and during the game?
Before the game, I absolutely thought there was, and I think if David Mead hadn't got knocked out like 90 seconds into the game, we would have been in for a much tougher time, because he is their captain. He is the leader of them, basically. He's a very inspirational captain, and like, he was so annoyed that he couldn't see out the rest of the game, and he is also an absolute quality fullback. Stargroth Armian is in the second division in Australia. That's where he plays with the PNG club team, and David Mead is an absolutely solid fullback.
Just interesting that you said he got a lot. The president tweeting about it in Lebanon,
yeah.
But over here, very little coverage. I mean, England are in a semi-final, might not be playing particularly well, but I think in any other sport, football, even rugby union, it begins seeming much more mainstream kind of press on it. Why do you think that is?
I mean, the main problem really is that rugby league is a sport played along the M62 corridor. I think literally every team in the top flight in the UK in the Super League is either from the M62 corridor, somewhere around there, or is that one team from the south of France that we've somehow managed to get on side. Like, it's not a game played anywhere sort of further south than maybe even here, maybe even Nottingham. the school system obviously has a lot to do with that. There's a lot of like union has the foothold in schools, and while there have been some absolutely quality players come through from sort of London around that area. Mike McMeekin was born in Basingstoke and he's played a couple of games for England. He's one of the best second rowers that we have. There isn't the interest down there because everywhere at school you grow up playing uni and you get told this is how rugby works, and you see someone playing it differently and you think, ugh, that's weird. It is a problem that we have. I think Prince Harry has been made a sort of sponsor of the RFL lately. The England Rugby League team got a tweet out of the Commonwealth, the Kensington Palace, I think, Twitter account, made a point about the England Rugby League team making it through to the quarters. But yeah, it's like you say, like if the Rugby World Cup was going on now, like in the exact same circumstances in Australia with all the games being played at the same place at the same times, we wouldn't hear the end of it. All the games would be televised live, probably free on the BBC or like ITV. And here we get the England games at 5 a.m. played in Melbourne, and we get absolutely none of the other games. And the other games are still really interesting games to watch.
I mean, Alex, Ollie, I think you're both Southerners, and neither of you have any particular interest in rugby league. What do you agree with this analysis for the reason why it's not so big, or do you think there's any other kind of factors involved?
No, I think Jack's hit the nail on the head, really. I think the point that you raised about schools is a big one, because obviously I grew up going to a private school and rugby union was all that we knew there. Rugby league wasn't played. I don't really know of any schools around the country
encourage
rugby league.
I grew up in a small town about 8 miles north of Hull. Like, Hull has two of the biggest rugby league teams in the Super League going. They're mad for it. I never played league at school. We got taught union. Like, that's the level that it has the foothold in this country.
Do you think this has really kind of affected the performance of the teams then? If it's not taught in the schools, maybe that's why we're struggling against teams like Papua New Guinea and why we've fallen behind some of the better sides.
I'd imagine so. Like, the thing is, where it is a big game, where it, like, in the places in the country where it is a big game, like in places like Wigan, that sort of area, they're so absolutely mad for it. You do get the best players in the UK, and some of the best players in the world come from there. Equally, like the England fullback at the moment, Gareth Widder, was born in the UK, moved to Australia at a very young age. He went up through the Melbourne Storm system. So, like, we do have the talent overseas, and we can bring in people on heritage rules and all that sort of stuff. But then people get up in arms about that, which again is something you don't see them doing in uni. You don't see, like, all this hoo-ha about Denny Solomona being brought in for England against Argentina in the tests earlier in the year. But the very idea that we should be playing Chris Hyington in the second row, despite the fact that he is a very, very good second rower for England Rugby League, is somehow this massive problem. I don't understand it. The fan mentality is something that I don't understand, really, and it does annoy me.
Yes, you are listening to the Tuesday Sports Show. We've already covered rugby league, but now we're going to dive into a bit of boxing, because the scheduled Hay Bellew fight has been postponed or potentially cancelled due to a freak injury to David Hay. Alex, what's happened here?
Well, it's been described as a freak accident was the term used. David Hay, from all accounts, was training, doing some sort of stair conditioning session, a very standard procedure, and he slipped. Which isn't that uncommon, but what he did is he sort of instinctively grabbed the handrail and he's managed to tear his bicep.
I hear that every day.
I mean, it sounds very nasty and very uncommon. I think you do have to consider, though, whereas it might be uncommon for us, this is a man who has been boxing for a very long time, I think 25 years or so, and his body will have been affected by all those years of punishment and training, which does make him more sort of volatile to these accidents, especially in the later stages. He's not a young man anymore. He's 37 at this point. The rematch, which was meant to be on the 17th of December, is now going to be held on the 24th of March or 5th of May, but there is going to be a rematch. There was some speculation as to whether Bellew would actually take the rematch, whether he'd wait that long, because we do know he wants to fight Hay again and really prove that the first win back in March wasn't a fluke. And so there was some speculation whether he'd take the fight, because Tyson Fury actually said he'd be up for fighting Bellew, but that is still subject to Tyson Fury being allowed to fight, because there is still the question of him maybe getting a ban for drugs. So that's still on the cards, which is adding into the confusion. To make it even more confusing, you're in a situation where Tyson Fury has challenged Bellew. Tyson Fury has also challenged Anthony Joshua. Deontay Wilder has challenged Anthony Joshua, and Wilder is he beat Bermaine Stiverne on the 5th of November in a brutal fight, and the knockout actually went viral on Facebook because it was very nasty and a very impressive win. So a lot of complex action in the world of boxing, really. But going back to this specific incident, Hay has, well, he's torn his bicep. He said he was devastated, was the term he used, to not be fighting immediately. I think he was very gutted when he lost that fight in March to Bellew. Stopped in the 11th round. And I think by the end of it, it was a sort of situation where the referee didn't really have any other choice. Hay was just on the ropes. He wasn't defending himself. And he will be absolutely gutted by it.
Just on Hay, I mean, he's had to pull out of four of his last eight fights. I mean, one against Vladimir Klitschko, two against Fury, and now this. I mean, do you think he's had it? He's an old, like you said, he's getting on his career. He's had a number of injuries recently. Do you think it's kind of time that he kind of put down his boxing gloves?
It's an interesting one, boxing, because on the one hand, I'm very tempted instinctively to say yes, but I think it's a very individual thing, because while Hay is 37, and it is getting to the point where now you're a bit like, come on, it's your time to maybe pack it up a little bit. Bellew is 34, and he's still the Cruiserweight World Champion for the WBC, and he hasn't been continually pulling out of fights. So I think, like anything, it does come down to the individual. I don't think it suggests that all boxers over a certain age are past it, in the same way that not all footballers after a certain age are past it. It's very individual. With regards to David Hay specifically, I do think it's time to maybe put the gloves away. There is a bit of controversy. I know we were talking about it outside, about what are his motives for doing this fight. Is he looking to fight for pride and to sort of prove that was a one-off loss and earn back a bit of dignity, or is he looking for one last big payday?
Yeah. Okay, I know, Ollie, you've been chomping at the bit to talk about Ashes, which are coming up in 2 days. So I'll give you 4 minutes to give us a little thoughts on the selection, our chances, and predictions.
Yep, so the Ashes kicks off in 2 days, and I'm very excited for it, even though I do think that England are most likely going to get battered. They've done quite well in their warm-up games, but to be completely honest with you, all these games we were expected to win, so they don't really say a lot. Obviously, England are going to be considerably weaker in the sense that Ben Stokes is going to be absent. He doesn't look like he's going to play any part in it. And considering he's one of the best players in the world, I think England are really going to suffer without him. In terms of the selection, James Vince seems shoo-in to bat at number three at the minute, which is quite surprising in the sense that he's never batted at number three before. He doesn't bat at number three for his club, and he hasn't been called. This is his first call-up for England in 2 years, so he's most likely going to bat at three. Mark Stoneman's going to open the batting with Alistair Cook, but I'm quite happy with that pairing because in the last sort of 6 or 7 years, we haven't been able to find a replacement for Andrew Strauss to bat alongside Cook, and Mark Stoneman seems to be, I think there's been 10 or 11 players who have been tried and none of them have really done the business, and Mark Stoneman seems to be the ideal long-term replacement for Andrew Strauss, and he's also been doing very well in these warm-up games. He scored a couple of centuries, he's scoring a lot of runs, so that's pleasing to see. Joe Root's going to bat at four. I'm a bit annoyed at this because, to be completely honest, I'd like him to bat a bit higher. I think he's one of the best batsmen in the world. He's definitely England's best batsman, and normally in Test match cricket, your best batsman bats at three. He doesn't really want to do this because he just says he doesn't like going out to bat so early. He likes time to prepare. But to be completely honest, when our number three batsman's getting out so early, he tends to be in quite early anyway. So I think making the step up would be a good thing. Then at number five, it's going to be Dawood Malan, another player who hasn't been tested. This is going to be his first Ashes series. But again, he has been scoring a lot of runs in the warm-up. It'll be interesting to see how he fares. Johnny Bairstow is going to bat at six. He's been an ever-present member of this England team for the last 3 years now. He's solidified his place as England's first-choice wicketkeeper since Matt Prior retired. Moen Ali is going to bat at seven. He's probably the best number seven batsman in the world, one of the best all-rounders in the world, so that's going to be good. Chris Wokes is going to bat eight, and then making up the tail is probably going to be Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson, who are obvious. And then the last position is going to be the interesting one, because it's going to be whether England go with an extra spinner in Mason Crane or extra fast bowler in Craig Overton. No, none of these two have actually had a cap for England yet, so both of them are going to be risks. But I, for one, would probably go with Mason Crane. He's played a lot of cricket in Australia before, which I think is why he's been picked. So yeah, he would make up the number 11 position for me. So that would be my England team. But I am predicting an England loss.
This is URN Sport.